Accession number 19043, Real One.
Real One, where were you born, please?
I was born in Nacha Gully, which is now part of Pakistan.
Which year was this?
In 1923.
Is this a Punjab?
Yes.
Were you born in the Punjab because your father was in the Indian Army?
Yes, he was serving in the Punjab Regiment.
And did you grow up and have your schooling in England?
Yes, my very earliest schooling was received from a governess we had. But at the age of 6 and a half, I came back to England and went to a small boarding school at Winchester called Eastacre.
And how old were you when you finished your schooling?
My schooling at Eastacre,
after
that, I went to a preparatory school called Bilton Grange, where I was until the age of 13.
Where is Bilton Grange?
Bilton Grange is not far from Rugby. And after that, I went on to Uppingham, a public school in Rutland, where I was until I was 18.
So that must have been 1941.
Yes.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany in September 39?
On September the 3rd, 1939, I drove down, or was driven, by my family who were holidaying in Scotland, and we arrived at our home near Peterborough in time to hear the announcement that we were at war with Germany, which was 11 o'clock, as I recall, on the 3rd of September.
What were your feelings about it?
Well, at that stage, I suppose I was quite excited. I think my mother and father were very depressed, but to me it seemed quite exciting. And I realized that I would be involved in the war, being of an age when I could be called up.
Did the war affect you very much in the first couple of years?
No, I continued my schooling until 1941, and in fact I extended it for 1 year to go to Cambridge, and the only way that it affected me was firstly that I was interested in my father's activity. He was called back to command a searchlight detachment and was based at Wittring Airfield, which was heavily involved in the Battle of Britain. And so I got certain first-hand information from him about that, since he was able to, and in fact sat in on the operation centre throughout all that period. So that was particularly interesting and exciting. And I remember some of his stories about what went on at Wittring Airport, particularly the activities of the Polish squadron, which was based there, who were apparently quite ruthless in their activities in the air. No hesitation about shooting down, parachuting Germans and that sort of thing. This made quite an impact on me as a boy. Otherwise, the only impact the war had was that we had to receive some refugees from London, and we put up two families at our home near Peterborough. Otherwise, I continued my education and was at Cambridge, at Trinity College, until May 1942, and I joined the Coldstream Guards as a guardsman in August 1942 and went direct to an officer's training college.
Could I just interrupt you there? Any other memories of RAF Wittering during the Battle of Britain?
Not particularly Wittering. We used to hear the German bombers going over at night, and we particularly remember we knew there was a major German raid going on one night because you could identify the German planes by the intermittent sound of their engines. And that was the night that Coventry was bombed. And we were on a direct line from the East Coast to Coventry. And that was a very busy night. But I don't remember anything else particular. I don't think about Wittering.
Did any bombs fall at Uppingham School or near Uppingham School?
Not particularly. No, not particularly near. And not particularly near our home, for that matter.
What were you doing at Trinity College?
Well, my father was very keen that I should have the experience of going to a university. And by going when I did in September 41 until May 42, part of the curriculum for me was to join the STC, it was called, the Senior Training Corps. And therefore, as a result of doing that, I was able to go direct to the OCTU, Officers Training Unit, and I didn't have to spend several months going through the ranks. So I think with hindsight, I think that was a good decision because the experience of the university was interesting and valuable. And I always felt afterwards, when I caught up with some of my colleagues from school who went and joined up at the same time but who didn't go to the university, they spent some very dreary months in basic training units. The only advantage they had when I caught up with them at the officers' training unit was that they knew how to polish brasses and press their trousers under the mattress and things like that. And I felt that I'd had a far more valuable experience than they had.
Did the war in 1941-42 much affect Cambridge?
Well, I think it did, because it seemed that Cambridge was restricted very largely to professional people in the science world and the medical world, and there was a very small section like myself who were going there to read the arts. I read history. There was a sort of atmosphere that, whereas students of the sciences and, as I say, medical people were doing a valuable training which could help with the war, people like myself were really joyriding and having a good time, and we ought to be in uniform. But it really, my year at Cambridge was just over 6 months. So I don't think it really, it didn't bother me, but there was that slight atmosphere of antagonism towards the people like myself, who were clearly just going to benefit from the pleasure, if you like, of living in a university.
Any bombs fell on Cambridge at that time?
Not. Yes, there were one or two, and there was one not very far from where my lodgings were, which damaged a Chinese restaurant that I used to go to occasionally, but it didn't kill many people, I don't think. It was not a huge bomb. But there was the odd occasional activity.
What was the address of your lodgings?
Lodgings was 24 Portugal Street.
Can you tell me next about going to the Coltrane Guards in August 42, please?
Well, my father had always wanted me to join the army, and he had hoped, I think, that I would join a Scottish regiment. The reason I joined the Coldstream Guards was because one of the trustees at Uppingham was a General Sir Alfred Codrington, who lived at Preston, which was just outside Uppingham, and he was the colonel of the Coldstream Guards, and I think he was always on the lookout for likely lads, as it were, and he met my father on one occasion, speech-giving or something occasion, and said, well, why doesn't he join my regiment? And my father hadn't even considered that as a possibility. And that was how, in the end, I had to go and meet the general and had lunch with him at Preston one day, which was a rather alarming experience for me. He evidently approved of me, and from then on, I suppose it was relatively plain sailing. And I was visited once while I was at Cambridge by the regimental adjutant to check up on my interest and activities and so on. But otherwise, I was marked down as a potential Coldstream Guards officer from then on. I'm very glad I was.
What was the next step for you?
Well, the next step was going to the OCTU at Mons Barracks, Aldershot, where I joined a platoon that entirely consisted of potential Guards officers. And we had 3 months intensive training there. And I was commissioned at the end of November 1942.
Was the period at OCTU of much benefit to you?
Yes, it was, because I had very little previous training other than the STC at Cambridge. And it enabled me to get to know quite a good group of people who I was going to meet over the years that followed. The instructors were all guardsmen, and it was a very good basic introduction to life in the regiment.
What was life like in Aldershot in the second half of 1942?
Well, we were very busy. We didn't have any bombs or anything like that. It was just pretty intensive military training. Not much time off. I have really no comment on it. It was a busy time for us, and I think we were very well trained. We had very good instructors. And I felt when I finished there that I was ready to join the regiment.
So you were commissioned in November, and then what?
I think it was the end of November or beginning of December. And then I was posted to the Guards Training Battalion at Pirbright. And I was there until yes, I was there for almost a year. It seems a long time looking back on it, but it wasn't until April, end of April 1944, that I was drafted to join the 2nd Battalion in North Africa, although I didn't know where I was going at the time.
What was your role at Pirbright?
Well, for the first two or three months, all the young officers were a gang, put through sort of instruction, and we acted as officers under instruction. And then I was selected as a result of what was called an aptitude test. It was decided that I was suitable to become involved with transport. The test for that was that I was able to assemble a light bulb which had been taken, a light bulb fitting which had been taken apart, and I was able to assemble it quicker than anybody else. And that dictated that I should go into the transport platoon and learn about transport. And in fact, I had a month or two, which I thoroughly enjoyed as the assistant transport officer at Pirbright, which meant that I was able to ride a motorcycle, and I was a motorcyclist. I had had my own before at home, and I did all the motorcycle training of guardsmen for about a couple of months or so. I went on a battle course up in Yorkshire at one stage, and it was a training year, and it was in a way rather surprising, I suppose, that we weren't required a little more urgently. But it was a valuable year, I mean, that one really felt one sort of belonged and was able to carry out the training of guardsmen with a certain amount of confidence and that sort of thing. It was a valuable year, but it was, in a way, a surprise that we weren't rushed off to join a battalion somewhere. But I suppose at that time, the demands for reinforcements were not all that urgent. But I didn't actually go abroad, as I said, until the beginning of I've got a bit confused on dates here. Can
we? It's all right, just saying.
Because it was May 1943. I remember my last night in London before I was drafted. I was at a nightclub called Churchill's where Edmundo Ross played, and at 1 o'clock in the morning, he stopped playing and announced that Tunis and Bizerta were ours. And I think that heralded the end of the war in North Africa. And the next day, I left with a draft from Regent's Park Barracks and went up to Liverpool and caught a troop ship. We weren't told where we were going, but we all guessed that we were going to Africa. But that was a very clear memory of the date. I think earlier I said 1944, but it was 1943. So I didn't have all that long at Pirbright. It was from sort of December 42 until the end of April 43. So I had a couple of months of that as the assistant MT officer and so on, and a bit of training. I remember very well leaving Regent's Park Barracks with a draft. One interesting thing about it was that when I was picked to go from Pirbright with a draft of guardsmen, we were formed into platoons. And I remember very well, I was to command one of the platoons that were going, and I had a very experienced platoon sergeant. Sergeant Hillier, his name was, I'll never forget it. And he said to me, look, there are two groups of guardsmen who are going. One is completely young, new recruits, young people. And the other is a lot of old soldiers who have been drawn in from Wellington Barracks and the other guards barracks, and they will need a lot of controlling. But if I was you, and I will see that we look after the situation, I should choose the old soldiers. You'll have a much better time. And so my first platoon, which was just a draft, was of a whole lot of characters that really were sort of out of this world and quite frightening. But they were absolutely marvellous, and I was very glad that I had them, because they were so much more interesting than a batch of 18-year-olds who were rather raw recruits. And so that was my first platoon, and I took them out to Africa.
In what way were they out of this world?
Well, they were all characters, and they all had stories to tell of their time in the army, and they understood the regiment. They knew how to look after themselves. I mean, if sort of on the ship, I remember, they looked after themselves, but they also looked after me. They thought it was very important that their platoon commander should be well looked after. And I sort of had a particular good spot to sleep in, and that sort of thing, on the floor of the lounge. But there was somebody there who made sure my kit was all there, and this sort of thing. It was just a small thing, but it was quite interesting. And I was rather grateful for that. I think it was again a sort of insight into the regiment that I wouldn't have got from a whole bunch of new recruits. But they were marvellous men, I think most of them. Quite a number were complete rogues, in that they could get away with not doing something they would, but if, as far as I was concerned, anything that the platoon had to do, that was fine. But they were just what I came to regard as excellent soldiers. They knew how to look after themselves, and they knew what life was all about. And I found it very interesting. And one met them again and met people like them. I've always enjoyed the characters of life and the characters one meets, and I find that they're the sort of people you have to face up to, and if they can if they think they can put something over you, they will. But if they know you're a no-nonsense person, then they're very good supporters. It was a very interesting period then for me.
Which ship did you go out in?
It was called in those days the Johan van Olden Barneveld, and it was a Dutch ship. And the crew was still, quite a few of the crew were from the, I suppose, Dutch East Indies. And it was quite a large ship. I had no idea how many troops were crowded on board. I slept in one of the lounges on the floor, I remember. But they did have rather good food. I was introduced to chicken breasts and peaches, I remember, one night. But of course, those troop ships were hell for other ranks. Absolute hell, down below decks, and with no portholes open, and so on. It was quite awful. I was given the job on board of being in charge of the armoury, which was not a pleasant job at all. Fortunately, I've never been seasick, but the armoury was right up at the front end of the ship, but down as low as you could go, in the holds almost. And the movement of the ship was terrific. Up at the bow there, and it was frightfully stuffy. It was not a pleasant job to be in charge of that. But no, I was very glad when the journey ended. It wasn't much fun.
And where did you finally get to?
We went, we did a sort of loop out into the Atlantic and then came in through the Straits of Gibraltar, and we landed in the end at Algiers.
What did you find there?
Well, Algiers was a sort of main base for the, I suppose, the First Army it was. And when we went ashore there, we staged for a night or two in a transit camp. And going the other way were thousands of German prisoners. They were coming into Algiers, marching down to the docks, and I imagine being put on ships to go to Canada or somewhere, or back to England or something. But it was a very dramatic sight, seeing these thousands of German prisoners marching in the opposite direction to us, down to the docks to go on board and be taken away.
What was their demeanor?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think I remember them looking fairly downcast, but not, I mean, they were sort of reasonably dressed and sort of organized. We just went to a transit camp where I think we spent 2 nights or 3 nights before we got transport to take us on to the east, to another transit camp along the coast. And there we spent some time, a week or two or a few weeks. And then eventually we got transport and we were split up. And